a couple days ago. Does everybody have a copy of that? Hearing nothing to the contrary. So what we can do is we can go through.
Yes. Jeff, is it one call draft procedure for conflict step by step?
It is, and it was in the email dated Sunday the 20th. Well, Sunday my time. It might have been Monday some other people's times, but.
Yeah, I have that.
Okay, it's titled Latest Draft of Issue 2, : Conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we'll just go over the changes that I made, and I think it was all based on the call that we had a couple weeks ago.
And David Maher joining.
Hi, David. So we're just starting to go over the draft procedure for conflicts, the latest revisions, which have dated the 21st.
Okay.
The I sent around two versions. I sent around a clean version and a red line version. So if you look at the red line version, you could see the changes that were made, in the last two drafts. So what I did is, if we go through the changes in the draft procedure for conflicts, I guess, let me just start. The only agenda today is to really just approve the draft procedure for conflicts. And then if we do that, or if we need a couple more days on the list to do that, the goal is to send this draft procedure along with the issue one draft to basically inform the council, send it to the council, just inform them that we have finished these two issues, and so that that'll be prepared for them. I don't believe there's going to be any type of resolution on this, and Marilyn may be able to clarify. I think it's just really informing the council as to where we are, giving them copies of the draft. They may also want, I believe it may have to go through a public comment period anyway.
I saw, Jeff, this is Steve, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I saw on the agenda for Cape Town that's been posted that this would be the subject, who is Task Force 1-2 recommendations would be the subject of a public forum.
Yes.
Prior to the GNSO Council meeting, which I took it to mean that the GNSO Council would actually plan to do something or
no.
to consider these two items in Cape Town, but that may be, maybe I was reading too much into that.
Marilyn,
We won't be making decisions. The purpose of the public forum is to take more, to give us a chance to hear from you who hasn't to now provided comments. Decisions we would have had to have had, actual firm recommendations from the task force. A recommendation, this consensus was not. So we're always. That.
So, what do we what would we have to do? I understand that we can't do this time for Cape Town next week.
Right.
What steps have to happen for these two items to become recommendations of the task force, and then to be acted on by the council?
I give my interpretation, Jeff. You and Joe want me?
Sure, Marilyn. Why don't you go first, and I'll jump in if I.
Okay. I think working from what we understand the PDP process to be.
Marilyn,
you're breaking up.
Okay. But thank you, Jeff. Maybe I'm just.
Yeah, why don't I just. I'll just kind of give my interpretation. And my interpretation is that we would. I'm going back to the bylaws as we speak. But my interpretation is that. We would submit these to that there needs to be a public comment period anyway for these before they get to a council vote. So we would submit these to the council and then the council would declare a public comment period open on it. So they would presumably post it, send it to the constituencies for comment. And let me as I'm speaking, I'm going to the bylaws.
Would we be in a position to have them do that in Cape Town?
I would think so. I mean, that's going to be our recommendation, is that we hope that it proceeds to the next level,
okay.
Which would be going to the public comment period.
Okay.
And
one other question: could you or Jordan just circulate what we have on first issue as well, because I'm not sure I've seen the final version of that.
Okay, yeah, I'll get together with Jordan. I think he was supposed to send around the final version, so we'll get it around to the group.
Great.
So let me just task, I'm just going through the bylaws real quick. Upon receipt, this would be considered a preliminary, I guess this would be considered a preliminary report, or initial report. Yeah, it's a 20-day public comment period.
Okay.
And then, so hopefully by the meeting, the council meeting in January, they could, there'll be a 20-day comment period, and then the staff manager is supposed to prepare a final report with the comments, and then hopefully the council could vote shortly after. So the goal is to either January or February to get these two voted on. So that said, that's the process. Some more procedural process things. I'm not going to be in Cape Town, but Jordan will be. And Glenn, maybe you can tell us the time that we have booked on the Tuesday, or is there a specific time slot that the task force is going to meet?
I don't think it's been decided whether it's going to be in the morning or the afternoon. First of all, how much time would you like for the combined task forces, because it can be on Tuesday, Wednesday morning from 10:30 to 12:30, or from 4 to 5 or 6 in the afternoon.
Let me throw it out to the group. I know, is everyone who's going to be there, will they be there by
Wednesday?
By Wednesday.
I'll be there. Tony Harris.
Marilyn will be there.
Okay.
I'll be there, Nicholas.
Nicholas and Tom, I heard you said you'll be there Tuesday.
Yeah, that's correct.
Now, is it possible, and I don't know if this is, Glenn, is it possible or is it too late to get kind of a call-in, or is it too difficult from there?
I'll try and fix that up. I'll try and fix that up because there will be Polycom phones, so I will try and get that organized.
Well, then, if we can do that, I would ask, and I'll throw it out to the group since I'm going to have to call in, I would ask for it to be in the afternoon since there is a six-hour time difference.
It's a seven-hour time difference.
From
Eastern Standard Time.
Yeah, and Steve, are you going to be here or are you going to be there?
I will be here.
Okay.
I will not be in Cape Town.
So Steve and I would request, if there is a call-in number, if we could do it in the afternoon, if nobody in the group objects to that.
Marilyn?
I think that's fine, because I'll be attending both of the task forces anyway, whichever. It's fine. That's fine with me. That gives us an hour. Is that right? Is that the thing we need to post? I'm so sorry. Glenn, would you do it again?
I was going to understand a word.
Yes. It gives us an... Marilyn's just saying it gives us an hour. If we go from 4 to 5... in the afternoon. I think what is putting people off a bit is that it will be a long day because we start with the WSIS in the morning and then we've got the task force and then we've got to get lunch with task force people and the GNSO council, and then in the afternoon there's 2 hours where the registrars, Tom, you know more or less what's going on there, don't you?
Yes, I do, but actually, I don't know the whole schedule. I just know that the registrar meeting is throughout the whole day and ends at 5 o'clock sometimes.
Yes, and I think there is a sort of workshop that
the registrars are
doing between 2 and 4, where people might be interested in joining in. Is that so?
That's correct, yes.
And then it was thought that at 4 o'clock, when that is over, we could restart with the task forces again. So then, if it is your preference to have it in the afternoon, then we have it in the afternoon. And perhaps if it goes longer, it goes longer. What do you think? I don't know.
Well, I guess the main problem is that most of the veterans, Paul won't be able to participate on the meeting if it is during 2 and 4, so we should start at 4, at the earliest, I would say. But besides that, I think it's Wednesday is a very bad day because all the issues we have on the table for the registrars, at least, are pretty important. So if you could move it to another day, it would be preferred by the registrars, at least.
Tom, what time will the registrar meeting be over?
Well, I would guess somewhere around 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
I think there might be problems moving it to another day because the Wednesday has been kept apart for the GNSO task forces.
You may have covered this. Can we not just book the 4 to 5
service?
Yes. Yeah, let's book it and then see what happens. And maybe Tom, if there's this way that you and Paul could get out a little bit early, or maybe move some things around on the registrar schedule, or ask for it to be moved around.
Yeah, the only thing I don't really understand is why we have to schedule it on the most busiest day for all. I mean, all the constituency meetings are on Wednesday and Thursday.
No, Thomas, they're not. The constituency meetings are on Thursday.
So only the registrars
because you've got 2 days of meetings. That's why you
Okay, now I get it. Okay. So why don't we just take Wednesday somewhere in the afternoon, maybe after 4 o'clock, and do it for 2 hours or something. So that would be where we could participate at least, because the cancellation thing we talk about in that workshop is very, very important for the registrars as well.
Okay. Yeah, you have 2 full days. I'm looking at the schedule. You have 2 full days booked for the registrars.
Yeah.
All right, so Glenn, let's try to do that, and let's see if we can get a call-in number. If not, then Jordan can lead the meeting, and I think it's just for discussion purposes anyway. It's not really there's no decisions that are going to be made.
There are no decisions, but remember, this is with the council. This meeting is with the council.
Right, so it's going to basically be updating the council on our activities and giving them kind of an overview of what, obviously they'll have seen, and we'll talk about. Jordan will talk about issues 1 and 2, and they'll have seen a draft of that, and then of the tiered access, there'll be an update. And Marilyn, Jordan tells me that you were going to look into arranging a CRISP briefing at some point in Cape Town, or do I have that misunderstanding?
It's not a misunderstanding. I've been trying to figure out if we can do that. We have a problem with both time and who's going to be there. I have a call in to the staff to see if it's possible to work out a time to do it.
Okay.
And we have the problem with the availability of people and whether they would come just for this particular event.
So do you think it would be better to just arrange for a conference call after everyone gets back?
At this point, that would be my recommendation in terms of making sure that everyone can participate.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea too. So that this way, the people who aren't able to go will be able to listen in and react with it as well. Okay.
So you want the phone hookup?
If possible, yes. That's
okay.
Great.
I'll try and get the same system that we've got now, and I'll try and get the phone when I'm there. So I may only let you know sort of on Monday next week. Is that all right?
That's fine for me, and probably...
Once I'm there, the 29th. Because then I'll be able to say it with certainty about the phone, for example.
Okay.
And the meeting will only be on the 5th. That gives you 2 days.
That's fine for me. I'll block the time out on my schedule.
Okay, so it's 4 to 5, and it will be Jeff, Steve.
David.
David Maher?
Yes.
Yes. And anybody else who will know?
Maggie Mistar, yes.
Pardon? Maggie?
Yes.
You won't be there either?
That's correct.
And,
Glenn, I would send a note out on the list to find out.
Okay, and then they can send it to me, all right, fine.
Yeah. Okay, so now that administrative stuff is out of the way, let's go to the latest draft that I sent around. And I'm going to be looking at the red. I sent around 2 drafts. One is a clean version, one's a red line. So I'm going to be looking at the red line, obviously, because you could see what was added and what was taken away. In the preamble section, we discussed on the last call to basically delete the couple paragraphs that Milton had put in, but kind of substitute some wording. And I did that in the middle sentence that starts with, however, the task force recognizes that it's desirable to maintain, so far as it's possible, the uniformity of GTLD registrar and registry contracts to create a level playing field for competition. I think we had agreed on that last call, but I just kind of wanted to verify if everyone was okay with that.
Jeff, this is Steve.
Yep.
Do you want to go through the whole thing first, or if I have a comment at this point, should I raise it?
If you have a comment, I was going to go through the changes because I thought we were kind of agreed on the rest, but if you have comments on other things,
it's just on the changes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Bring it up, yeah.
Okay. I think this is, what I would suggest is that we add to the end of your sentence a few words, because level playing field for competition is important, but it's not the only issue. And I would suggest adding the words, and maintain predictability for all users of the domain name system.
Can you repeat that?
All users of the domain name system.
Okay, so now the wording would be, just to read the sentence, however, the task force recognizes that it is desirable to maintain, insofar as it is possible, the uniformity of GTLD registrar and registry contracts to create a level playing field for competition and maintain predictability for all users of the domain name system. Anybody have any comments on that? Concerns?
Well, for all users, how exactly do you want to define all users?
All users.
That's okay.
Okay.
Hello.
Hey, is that Milton?
Yeah.
Hi, Milton. It's Jeff. We're just going through the latest draft that I sent around.
Yeah, I've been having some problem with my Word program.
So we actually just started that. We were just doing administrative stuff for the last few minutes.
Oh, okay.
Do you have a copy of the latest draft, or?
I do.
Okay. Are you able to look at the, view the Chuck changes one?
That's what I'm not seeing here. Let me just...
There were two drafts on there.
Okay.
One was clean, one was trash.
All right, okay.
So if you're able to see that, we just were on the first edition.
Yeah.
Which was, and Steve just added some words, so I kind of wanted you to hear what those were. The sentence is, however, the task force recognizes that it's desirable to maintain, insofar as it is possible, the uniformity of GTLD registrar and registry contracts to create a level playing field for competition. And then Steve had suggested to add, and maintain predictability for all users of the domain name system. They're just adding that to after competition.
Maintain predictability?
For all users of the domain name system. Steve making the point that it's not just competition that you want uniformity, it's for predictability as well.
And, let's see, we have the task force determined that registrars and registries encountering such local difficulties should be allowed an exception from the contractual WHOIS obligation. Yeah, I don't have any objection to predictability.
Okay, good.
In fact, I think... Steve's amendment is predictable.
Okay. The next section was step one, notification. We've changed it to once receiving notification of an investigation. So I think we had agreed on that language on the last call.
Yeah, we agreed last time.
Okay. Then the next section is... we had agreed on all that. Okay. Right before step two, there's a paragraph inserted that says, depending on the specific circumstances of the who is proceeding, the registrar registry may request that I can't keep all correspondence between the parties confidential pending the outcome of the who is proceeding. I think we agreed on that one last time as well. Next changes was under step two. Well, it's actually not a change. It's a change in my draft because I had changed it to may, but now it's a shall. So I don't think that's really a change. Right above step three, the sentence that I added after the right above that at the end of that paragraph. Again, this says again that the registrar registry may request that I can't keep all correspondence between the parties confidential pending the outcome, which I think we agreed to as well.
Now the blue changes are who?
I'm not sure which ones are blue or on yours because they may be.
Okay, they're PM. Who is PM?
There are changes that, like, if you're looking at whatever color it is, the last sentence that I just read was my change.
Yeah.
The other changes were Steve, I think.
3981.
Yeah, that was Steve's changes that we had all seen in the last call. So what I really should have done was accept those changes. But the ones that are whatever color my changes are, that's the only changes from the last version. So the substantive change that I added, if you look at step 3, small 3, I added a sentence, and Steve, you may want to comment on it. This is the concept that we talked about, that there should be a presumption that there's no enforcement action unless there's unless there's a stability concern or interoperability concern. So what I did to come up with this wording, and this is the section I really kind of want to focus on, is I said, as a general rule, ICANN shall not recommend any enforcement action against such a registry or registrar unless it finds that enforcement action is necessary in order to preserve the operational stability, reliability, security, or global interoperability of the Internet. Now, what I did is I took that last part, that language, preserve the operational stability, reliability, security, or global interoperability of the Internet. I took that from the ICANN bylaws, from their mission or their core values. But I took that word
for it.
It's in their mission, okay. So I thought that would be the least controversial than coming up with new wording. But obviously, I want to hear from you all and hear what you think about that language.
This is Steve. I had one question actually about the earlier part of that sentence. This is a recommendation from the General Counsel to the ICANN Board. So shouldn't it be, as a general rule, the General Counsel shall not recommend?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Because, I mean, it goes to the Board. The Board obviously decides what to do with this recommendation. But,
right. You're right. It should be as a general rule, the general counsel shall not recommend any enforcement action. That's correct. Okay.
Could you repeat that at step 4 as well as the resolution part? That if the board decides that it should consider whether it has any impact on stability and so on and so on.
Right. So, well, step 3 first, right, says that the general counsel is going to prepare a report, and the report is basically going to say it's going to be a summary of the law regulation. It's going to be which part of the contractual who is that there's an exception that's requested. And then the third part is a recommendation of whether ICANN should agree to an exception for the registry registrar from one or more identified who is contractual provisions. And then I have we added a sentence basically saying, as a general rule, the general counsel shall not recommend any enforcement action against such registry or registrar unless it finds that enforcement action is necessary in order to preserve the operational stability, reliability, security, or global interoperability of the Internet. And again, that last language was taken from the mission statement.
Yeah, I can really agree to that wording. The only thing I would like to have is that we repeat this kind of wording in Section 4, or the Step 4, however you want to call it, the resolution, where we kind of recommend to the board that the board, in taking action, should consider exactly that as well.
Okay, so you would add after the, say, after the bullet points, a similar sentence saying, as a general rule, the ICANN, the board, shall not.
Well, this gets into some broader questions, I think, about when the board decides to enforce a contract and when it doesn't. I mean, this kind of gets beyond the who is issue, because ICANN, as part of its strategic plan, is supposed to come up with a strategy for enforcing contracts. So I just don't know how this might fit together with that.
Well,
they may now, again, I mean, the general counsel may have some comments on this too. But.
Right. So, I mean, if we, would you, I agree with you, Steve. I'm not sure how that would fit in. I'm not sure what ICANN's comments would be, but they're free to comment during the public comment period anyway, and I'm, you know, we'll make sure that they do. But would you oppose just putting it in there for now and to see what,
I'm not sure how it would fit into Step 4, because Step 4 just says, you know, you get a report and you can either approve it, you can modify it, you can have a public comment on it, you can ask GNSO to comment on it. It's kind of a procedural provision. So how would that fit in let's assume that the general counsel recommends that some enforcement action be taken.
Right.
And presumably he or she would say, and I think it's necessary to do that to preserve the operational stability, et cetera, et cetera. And would inserting this language in Step 4 mean that, for example, it could not be put out for public comment?
No, I think what
could
I would...
be referred to the GNSO?
Could
what
I
be
comment
modified?
On it?
I don't understand what it
means. Perhaps we could put it after the first bullet point, which says approving the report's recommendations with or without modifications. In general, such modifications shall not include any recommendations such modifications shall not recommend any enforcement action unless, you know, it's the same basic language, but I would put it after the first bullet point.
I think
Could I get in the queue?
It's sure.
Milton.
So let's, Tom, I heard you, and then Milton.
Go ahead, Milton.
Well, if I understand what Thomas is proposing, what he wants to make sure is that, okay, in Step 3, we've given guidance to the general counsel. We said you don't recommend enforcement unless it's necessary to be consistent with the ICANN mission, which has to do with basically global interoperability and coordination of unique identifiers. And I think what Thomas is concerned about is we don't want the board to be unconstrained in that respect also, so that when they approve the report's recommendations or not, it should be somehow guided as also being constrained by the need to preserve stability, reliability, security, blah, blah, blah. I think that's, as I understand it, what Thomas wants to accomplish with his proposed amendment. Now, Steve is correct that the Step 4 doesn't say very much about what happens if the board does not approve the report's recommendations. In other words, the interesting scenario here is a local registrar has received pressure from his government to modify the contract, it modifies the contract or its actions in some way, the general counsel determines that it's not necessary to enforce the contract against them in order to preserve operational stability, etc. And then the board says, well, we don't agree with the general counsel. We want to enforce the contract and put this registrar out of business. I agree with Thomas that we want something in there that makes the board constrained, if they decide to do that, that they have to demonstrate that it's somehow consistent with their mission.
Okay, yeah, so we're just trying to figure out the best place to put that, and obviously the general counsel will
comment. Jeff, are you in the queue?
I just injected myself, I guess. Steve, sorry about that, you're up.
Yeah. I can't agree to this because this is a much bigger issue on the question of ICANN enforcing its contract. It's something that is at the core of the ICANN MOU. It's at the core of the strategic plan. And I don't want to be in a position of telling them when, of constraining the ability of ICANN to enforce its contract. Now, everything it does has to be in conformance with its bylaws, so that's a given. And there are restraints that are built in there. But I think it should be able to get the advice of the general counsel and then carry out its fiduciary responsibilities in deciding whether to enforce the contract or not. I don't think we should be recommending that after all the years that ICANN has spent not enforcing its contracts, I don't really want to be part of a recommendation that it not enforce its contracts.
Well, we're not saying that they're not supposed to enforce their contract.
No, you're saying that even when there's a violation of the contract, you're putting restraints in addition to what's already in the bylaws on when they can bring enforcement action. I just think that's the wrong message to send. I think we should be supporting the idea that ICANN can do what it has failed to do for the last 5 years, which is enforce its contracts. They have to exercise fiduciary responsibility to do that, and I think we made it clear that how the advice to them should be structured. But I just don't think we can anticipate all these situations, and I don't think it would be appropriate for us for this first recommendation that comes out about the contract enforcement to say, well, here we're signaling to you when to not enforce your contract.
All right, let me start a queue. So I hear David.
Marilyn.
Milton.
David. All right, hold on. My pen ran out, so I've got to write this again. Okay, I got David, Milton,
Marilyn,
and Maggie.
I would like to get in the queue as well.
Tom. I'll put myself after Tom. Okay, anybody else? All right, David.
Well, in response to Steve, I think there's a more fundamental problem here. And the real problem is the ad hoc response that ICANN represents to the real underlying problem. The real underlying problem is the whole nature of the who is. It's now serving an entirely different purpose than it was originally intended to serve, and ICANN, for various reasons, has been effectively paralyzed from dealing with that problem. We're now in a situation where we're trying to do some patchwork without attacking the central issue, which is really, it's a disgrace that all of this personal information about individuals is made available to the world at large. Maybe we can't do anything about that, but at least we can protect the, and this is, again, the nature of an ad hoc Band-Aid on the real problem, but what we're trying to do is allow registries and registrars to deal with local law, which is something that the ICANN founding groups never really dealt with. I think that this approach is a good one. It's not perfect. In an ideal world, if the who is system were had been properly designed in the first place or amended after the nature of the internet changed, we wouldn't have to worry about this. But I don't think we should be legalistic about the sanctity of ICANN contracts. The fact is they are not sacred, and we ought to recognize that.
So, David, you would recommend, with this provision, you would recommend adding the provision to the board or applying that provision to the board as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Milton's next.
Actually, Marilyn was next, but I'll go next if she doesn't mind.
Why don't you just go, Milton, then I'll go to Marilyn.
Yeah, I think, Steve, I think you're kind of misunderstanding what is actually going on here. If you'll recall, the debate, we have all already agreed that we have to have exceptions to the contract, and that the only way for those exceptions to exist is for ICANN not to enforce its contract. But we're not issuing a general blanket statement saying, hey, it doesn't matter if you enforce your contract, ICANN. What we're doing is, and actually we're empowering ICANN to enforce its contracts in those cases in which it really, an absence of enforcement would really conflict with its mission. In other words, this whole addition came when we decided, when we agreed to eliminate my preamble principle that said quite baldly that Who Is Data was not part of ICANN's core mission. But we did agree, based on comments by Thomas and other registrars, that we didn't want this procedure to be abused by registrars who might use it to either get a competitive advantage or simply play around, game the system. So we're saying very clearly in this statement that ICANN's board should enforce its contracts if it does, if an exception would threaten operational stability, reliability, security, blah, blah. So I think I just don't, I'm having trouble understanding your objection at this point. I think we just want the board to know, you know, what the policy is. That's our job.
Okay. So Milton, you'd be in favor, just to restate, you'd be in favor of adding that provision or something similar to that to the board language as well.
Yeah, I think it makes more sense to be in the board than in the general counsel. I mean, obviously the general counsel should follow the mission of the organization also, but the ultimate decision is made by the board.
Okay. Marilyn?
I'm inclined to be more supportive of the idea that Steve has laid out, that we should not be advising ICANN not to enforce its contracts. There's a vulnerability to ICANN not fulfilling its responsibility and fulfilling its contracts. We're trying to give some guidance that provides when there's an exception, and I think we've made a lot of headway on that. So since we're providing guidance on when exceptions can be provided, I don't want to suggest to the board that they should not encourage the staff to enforce the contracts. I would think that the exceptions would cover any needed leeway that's indicated.
Okay. Maggie was next.
I am wondering in my mind whether, I mean, I almost every contract has something like this, but essentially you have all the terms of the contract, but then you also have additional provisions that would say, in case a certain portion of the contract cannot be performed for various reasons, you know, then the parties would work together. And I'm kind of thinking outside the terms of a force majeure clause, which is more geared towards natural disasters and acts of God and things like that. But I'm just wondering if there are provisions like that in the contract that would essentially allow us to not use the words that say, do not enforce the contract, but kind of point to a provision in the contract, if it exists, or if it does not exist, essentially say the ICANN board or the general counsel or whomever will work with the registry and registrar to resolve the conflict. I think we're all kind of envisioning the same process, but the words of not enforcing the contract are getting in the way, I think.
Yeah, okay. I was going to issue something on that, but I'll wait till my turn. I have Tom, then Thomas, and then me. So, Tom Keller?
Okay. Well, coming back to what Steve just said about the enforcement issue and not telling the board what to do, as I understood the scope of the task force, it was always so that we should give some guidance to the board on how to decide on this matter and how to, you know, that we are set up to figure out how to deal with that in the future, and thought that we only have a real narrow scope on who is and not on the whole contractual matter. I think it's very well in that scope that we tell the board that there might be problems, that there might have to be made some exceptions, and that the board should consider that. I'm not saying that we give them strict rules what to do. The only sentence I really would like to have in there is that the board is free to make any decisions they like, but they should consider, first of all the things we already stated in state three. Step three, sorry.
Okay. Thomas?
I'm rather puzzled by the discussion we are having, because I'm sensing that we have some mind-bogglingly subtle differentiation at work with some people here, which creates this objection. What we are talking about, as people said before, is a process by which the board would ultimately waive certain parts of the contract, either waive them or just not enforce them. So I'm wondering if people really can't live with just the words not enforced, can't we put on something like, as a general rule, I can, couldn't we basically put in something which says that the board should waive or should provide exceptions from contractual obligations or relieve registrars from contractual obligations in order to accommodate a constructive and what's the word? Constructive and settlement of proceedings, unless waiving these obligations or lifting them would endanger operational stability, etc. So maybe, I'm wondering if maybe we can get out of this by changing the words but keeping the sense, or maybe there is more to this, but quite frankly, I don't understand the objection at this point.
Okay. I think I was next. One of my general overall comments and kind of thinking about this is, it's interesting because I'm not sure of any other corporation or even nonprofits where day-to-day decisions of enforcement of contracts are put on the board anyway. Kind of a unique organization where instead of the staff making a decision of when to enforce, it gets elevated, every decision gets elevated to the board. So it's kind of interesting that the way this whole thing is structured is that it's the board that makes the determination. When in reality, boards of nonprofits generally leave the day-to-day operations to the staff. And here we're saying that the staff shouldn't recommend any action unless the action is necessary for operational stability, reliability. But we're saying that the board can overrule that. The second comment, so I'm trying to balance this because it's kind of interesting, because you'd never see really contracts structured this way. The other thing to address Maggie's point about a force majeure is that normally with a force majeure, the contract would, you know, it's not just about non-enforcing obligations, it's usually about both parties backing away from all the benefits as well until this force majeure event, like, you know, natural disaster is over. So it's kind of
sure.
It's hard to apply that, but I think what we can do is in looking, you know, kind of taking what Thomas said is perhaps we can word something in there that's much more positive, that's not restrictive as far as the language, and maybe more acceptable. So it would say, you know, something like the board should keep in mind. The board's recommendation shall, or the board shall recommend action, something to the effect of whatever the board recommends it should be justified in order to preserve. So it's saying that they could do it, but it just needs to be within their mission to do it. So you're basically saying that the board should keep in mind the principles set forth in this paper in making its decision.
I think that, Jeff, quite frankly, I think that framing it that way would fill to balance the other way. Currently, the text basically says there is a presumption that an exception will be granted unless stability, blah, 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 say otherwise. What you say now would mean board do whatever you want. No presumption, no hint from the group, but please keep the basic principles in mind. That's a very different thing to say. In one case, you say go as far as you can to accommodate registrars in different jurisdictions if the effect is of the jurisdictions is that registrars can't fulfill their HUIS obligations. In the other event, you basically make a non-statement. It's not, it doesn't change anything from the state of the bylaws, of course, the board can't make decisions, or if not, it's not supposed to make decisions which endanger stability, etc.
Well, I guess
one thing of saying you can go as far as you can is a different thing to say you can't go further than there.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, and if I can modify my proposal, it would say under the first bullet point, approving the report's recommendations with or without modifications, that's what it already says, and then something like keeping in mind the guidelines or the principles set forth in step three above. It's kind of that middle ground. So again, like approving the report's recommendations with or without modifications, keeping in mind the principles set forth in step three above.
This is Steve. I think that is a good way to approach this. I think you raise a very good point, Jeff, that I don't even know what the procedure for enforcing contracts in general would be, both in terms of the bylaws and in terms of the terms of the contract itself, which provides some mechanisms for enforcement and for arbitration and so forth. So I think your proposal is a good way to address the issue without, as Thomas puts it, tilting the scales.
Before I actually can comment on Jeff's proposal, I have to understand it. I'm not sure I do so. So, Jeff, what would the text step 3 and 4 be in your view? Maybe you can just describe which changes would stay, which changes would go, and where you would add what.
Okay, well, step 3...
You have me just confused.
Sure. Step 3 would have the change that we talked about earlier. It would have that sentence saying, as a general rule, the general counsel should not recommend any enforcement action, right? That sentence would still be in step 3. In step 4, the first bullet point now says approving the report's recommendations with or without modification. I would add the words keeping in mind the principles set forth in step 3 above.
So why don't we spell it out? I mean, so why don't we take the whole sentence in there? I mean, if you can't read it in step 3, so why don't we put it in step 4 as well? I mean, it might be a duplicate, but it makes it very clear what we're after.
I think trying to come to some sort of compromise language between, because if I'm reading Steve's position in Maryland and Maggie, they would not like to see the words verbatim in there because they do want to preserve some sort of flexibility, and they don't want language to make it sound so restrictive. Whereas this basically takes it and puts it in a more positive light, but still has the ideas that we were talking about in step three.
Can you read that again, or what your proposal is?
Sure. The proposal is, right now under step four, it says, in bullet point one, it says, or the first bullet point, approving the report's recommendations with or without modification, then I would add the words, keeping in mind the principles set forth in section three above. Or, I'm sorry, step three above.
What I don't like about this is that step four, as drafted right now, is essentially descriptive. Actions could include, but are not limited to. So, this is I guess it's just about the weakest form of a hint as to how, as to what we want, that I've seen in a long time. This makes me rather nervous. Step four gives a menu of, non-complete menu of options, and one of these options is now including, is now respecting the principles. So I don't think this is, takes care of what was supposed to be done here.
Well, what if I...
I think Milton wanted to make a proposal, but he's at a very, very low volume.
Okay, I'm better than it. I picked up... Can I do something, Jeff? I think it solves your problem.
Sure, go ahead.
You put that language about principles articulated above into the statement, the board shall. You don't put it in the bullet points.
Yes. So if I... So if I started out the sentence, step four... Keeping in mind the principles set forth in step three above, comma, the board shall consider and take appropriate action.
Right. Yeah. I would accept that.
Okay. Steve?
Yes, I would accept that.
Marilyn?
Yes.
Okay. Maggie?
Yes, sounds good.
Tom?
Yep.
Tom Keller said yes?
Yes.
Okay. And Thomas?
Yep.
Okay, David. Sorry.
Yep.
Well, that was
thank you. Ask me, Tony Harry.
I'm sorry, Tony. I don't have the list.
I'm okay with it.
Good. Anybody else that I might have accidentally missed? Well, good. Thank you very much, Milton. I think that that was a good solution. That helped. Good. Moving on. Step. Or step five, public notice. I think the only things that I added there was some confidentiality language, but that was in the last draft that we looked at. But just to refresh everyone's recollection of it, it says, the second sentence now says, prior to the release, or let me go with the first sentence, the board's resolution of the issue together with general counsel's report shall ordinarily be made public along with the reasons for it and shall be archived on a public website, along with other related materials for future research. And I added the sentence, prior to the release of such information to the public, the registrar may request that certain information, including but not limited to communications between the registrar and ICANN, or other privileged/confidential information, be redacted from the public notice. In the event that such redactions make it difficult to convey to the public the nature of the actions being taken by the registry or registrar, the general counsel shall work with the registry or registrar on an appropriate notice to the public describing the actions being taken and the justification for such action. And just going back into why I put that in there, it's because of the fact that this often may come, not just, this may be subject to litigation or an investigation, and to preserve a company's attorney-client privilege or other confidentiality matters, you'd want to keep, some of the things may need to be kept confidential. So again, the basic point is that in general, there's going to be a report along with the recommendations of the general counsel's report will be made public, unless, basically the registrar may request that certain parts of it be redacted because it's confidential, and if those redactions take away, you know, make it hard for the public to understand what happened, then the general counsel will work with the registrar to, on an appropriate public notice so that the public really can understand what happened and why. So hearing any objections or just utter confusion? Okay. And then the last thing, I think we agreed upon the last call. So, that being said, I think we have a relatively final version here. I will send it around again to the group, and if everybody can just weigh in, say, yes, I agree with this draft, that would help us, and then Jordan and I will send it up to, we'll send an official note to the council asking that it be put for, asking that this be considered our preliminary report on this issue, and that to start the required 20-day public comment period. Any objections?
No, that sounds good, Jeff, and I would just ask if you to circulate that as soon as possible so we can make sure that our council reps have it.
Yeah, I'm going to circulate this final draft right after the call.
Great.
Because I've been making the changes as real time. And so I'll submit this as our proposed final draft. If everyone can weigh in, say, yes, I agree, or this, you know, the IP constituency, or no, actually, it's not a constituency statement, so just say, yes, I agree. And then I'll send it around, and Jordan and I will send it this week, hopefully, if we can get responses. We want to send it this week so that the council can post it.
Maybe, Jeff, you could leave something like a 24-hour window from now on so we can review the draft and just make sure that nobody has misunderstood anything.
Yeah, I'd like to set that 24 hours. I know that might be a little aggressive, but that's a great suggestion.
Just before people start
leaving,
quote, yeah. Voting, unquote, on this one, just so.
Oh, you mean 24 hours before?
Just give everybody a moment to read it and to make sure there are no misunderstandings and we are actually all thinking and talking about the same text.
Okay, I agree. Okay, so everyone, we'll also, I'll get Jordan to circulate the latest draft of the first one as well, so we can vote on that one as well. Everyone have a safe trip to Cape Town, and I'll miss being there, but I'll try to call in for the task force meetings. And I think we have some good work to present. Yes, Marilyn.
Yes, sorry, I just have a question. What are we going to present about our work on tiered access? Just a status report on what we're doing?
Yeah, I believe Jordan was just going to do a status report.
Okay. Could I ask a question about that?
Sure.
I don't know how many of you are aware of this, probably most of you are, but the Canadian Internet Registration Authority just basically put out a document saying that they're moving towards tiered access. Is there somebody from CIRA that we could invite to speak at our discussion?
Milton, I think that would probably be better to do in a call after the meeting.
Okay.
Just because there's going to be a bunch of people that won't be there, and I think it would be more effective. But yes, I think we should invite them, but I think it would be more effective to do it when everyone can actually participate on the call.
I meant at the Cape Town meeting. Weren't we having some kind of a public event where we were inviting people?
I think the public event was really just, there is a section on the public forum on it, and I believe on the GNSO public forum, because there's two of them now, I believe the purpose of that was just for someone to give the status and describe the recommendations. And then it wasn't to invite, like, a panel, so anybody could speak.
Oh, okay. All right.
Jeff?
Yes, Marilyn?
Jordan, could we ask to have whatever's going to be presented as the status report circulated to the task force?
I will definitely ask that. I'll ask Jordan for that. Okay. Any other questions? All right, well, thank you, everyone, and I will be putting this draft on the MIT list in very shortly.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.